I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Fanzine.live podcast.
This is
Rebel
Yell.
This is the Rebel Yell podcast.
Episode 2 is slightly later than we originally said, but for good reason, because we managed to nail down the brand new women's manager, John Donoghue, haven't we, Pete?
We have, an exclusive for the Rebel Yell podcast.
Yeah, it's nice to actually, the original plan was to have Michelle in the podcast, but obviously she left the club, and sort of in the last week before publishing the second edition of the end of season unparty, we managed to get John involved in the podcast, so we've got him coming up. But Pete, I think great first episode. I really enjoyed speaking to Stu and George and Hinch, and it felt like Hinch in his interview is a bit of normality back again.
Yeah, absolutely. After what we've all been through recently, it's just good to talk about football properly and something and something to look forward to.
Yeah, and move forward to getting back to normal, if you can say normal, the new normal, the season ahead. But exciting news to hear in the the team have been training 2-3 times a week, a couple of friendly matches which we've quite convincingly won.
Yeah, always good when a worthy win, because we were on the run of quite a few defeats in friendlies, weren't we, before stopped playing. So yeah, good to get back to winning ways and putting the ball in the back of the net.
And from what the rumours are and what we hear, that a lot of maybe youth players and trialists and stuff have been playing for the first team in these friendly matches. So possibly a few good future signings there.
Yeah, there's definitely some talent in the academy team anyway. So yeah, I'd expect some of those players to be pushing for first team place next season, to be honest.
Exciting times. But without further ado, we did promise you, probably when we were doing the live broadcast last summer and a couple of podcasts, that when the moment is right, the chairman Barry Hunter will sit down with us and discuss the pitch scenario and what the situation was with the pitch and give a little bit of interest to himself. But I think the listeners got a quite enjoyable listen coming up, Pete. Very interesting to hear Barry in the future of the club.
Yeah, definitely. It was really insightful and a lot of positivity as well that he came across with regarding everything. Yeah, so I'm sure fans will enjoy it.
Yep, they will. And then after that, we'll be speaking to John Donoghue and speaking to the director of football, Nathan Bowen. But without further ado, we'll pass you on to Barry. How are you doing, Barry? How's things going, I should say?
Hi, James. Hi, Pete. All good. We're good. We're looking forward to getting out to meet a few people in the gardens and getting a few more walks out there. Looking forward to the world opening again.
So, Barry, it's been a while. How's this lockdown period? How's Christmas with the family? And it looks like from your camera, you finally moved into the house that you were renovating when we did the live broadcast last summer.
Yeah, we moved into a house in just on the Surrey-Sussex border there and about 2 years ago. But we've only been living in it for 6 months because it wasn't habitable. So we had to move away. Went up to the Peak District for a while with live at our friend's who had a spare home, which was very handy. We used to live up that way. And lockdown has been really, really busy. It's just the way I look at life. I mean, I think when things are a little bit going against you, how can you turn some of that into an opportunity? And I've done that at work, but also with the football club. We've taken the opportunity, James, to see how we can really push things on and give them a really pleasant surprise when all things come back. I think we're in a good place on that. So it's been pretty hard work, but I'm really rewarding. I'm hoping that everyone's going to see the fruits of our labour soon. I understand that Hinch and Nathan were both very nervous to play on the pitch when it first laid, and they didn't want to jinx it. And they just kicked down the side on the channels down the side.
We've spoken for quite a few months, and although you've been on previous broadcasts, we really want to sort of just get to know you a bit more and sort of just tell us about your history and how you came to be the chairman of Worthing FC. So when was it you exactly? I can't remember the date. The years just go past now. Like when did you actually step into the role for the chairman's role?
I stepped into the role in October 2019.
Yeah,
that was it.
It feels like 10 years ago, not 18 months ago.
10 seasons ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the weird thing is you haven't even seen a full season as the chairman yet, have you really?
No, technically, I haven't, no.
So how did it all come about then? Because I know you've got some history with the club with your father, am I right?
Yes, my dad was involved big time with the club as a volunteer for, 30 years. I came down to the club to watch the teams, and my dad was a volunteer. He would cut the grass, clean out. He was just a volunteer. He was there at the ground every week, if not most days. He took a lot of pride in the pitch. And
look at you, you've ripped it up and replaced it with plastic. What have you done?
Well, that was George, not me. he did the tannoy. He did all the announcements and stuff as well. He's a real, real volunteer. So I was really involved with the club from a very early age, and actually played at the club as an under 18 with Jim Lelliot, Paul Lelliot's dad, who unfortunately passed, but played in his team with a lot of good players. Had a very good team then, and played in the reserves and the first team under Keith Rowley, who is a friend. I would consider a friend of mine even today, and had a lot of good times with Keith. So yeah, no, I played at the club, and probably, I think we were in the same league as we compete in today, but the year I played was the year we got relegated from the Prem of the Isthmian down a league. So that was unfortunate. I suppose the highlight was probably we had a famous game down at Woodside, and I was in my early 20s, and we played Crystal Palace in a friendly.
And, hiss, boo, hiss.
Yeah, well, exactly, because I'm here. I scored. We drew 2-2, and I scored both goals, left and a right footer.
Nice.
So, good memories. Lots of games down at Woodside. I remember playing one game for Uxbridge Town against Worthing, and my dad was on the tannoy that night, and we won 4-2, and I got 3, and he was quite animated about the goals being scored against his club.
Were you walking home after the game? No lifts, I guess.
None of that, no. But I go back a long time with the club, and obviously I was born in Worthing, and went to Whitemead and Downsbrook and St Andrews, Northbrook College. My parents actually set up a football club back in the day with a lot of my friends' parents called South Down United. And I don't think they're going anymore. But a lot of people remember South Down United, and my dad was a founding member there. So lots of roots in the football community, and also from Worthing, which is kind of why I was very keen to try and help out.
Because you spent a lot of your years and time at Loxwood Football Club, didn't you?
Let me sort of guide you to Loxford. I did go to Loxford, but there's a long story that I'm going to cut very short for you. Mm. Went to university, and then I worked at various companies outside of the area. So I moved to London and moved to the north, well, the north and the Midlands as well. Went to Birmingham at university, and then worked for Boots and Heinz and Adidas. And at Adidas, we were living in the Peak District. And then I was there 10 years. And when we came back, I was desperate to play football because I didn't have any time to play football when working for Adidas. That's your sports brand. You're out there when everyone else is playing sport. You're working.
Yeah.
So I decided that when we came back, I was 40 years old. I wanted to play a bit of football again. We moved into a village in West Sussex, just next door to Loxford. And so I went round to a few local villages to see where the lights were on. And the lights were on at Loxford Football Club. And I asked if I could join them training. They took one look at me and thought, well, he's not going to last very long at his age. But they said, look, just come on in. Anyway, I think it's 16 years later, having played and then managed, then I was director of football and then I became chairman. We went from the West Sussex Division 5. We got 9 promotions and ended up in the County League Prem. And not through anyone putting any money in, but just getting a good group of people together and working hard at it. And I left Loxford around the end of 2018, early 2019. We had 200 juniors playing in the club as well, left them in a good place. I thought that the club had reached a pinnacle and somebody needed to take the reins that could really just keep it thriving. And I wanted to jump onto a project that maybe I could take further. And actually, that's when Calvin gave me a call. Remember Calvin, and asked if I could help with the pitch. He had been having a number of issues with the pitch at that time, hadn't he? Mm-hmm. And because of the work I do through Adidas and the FA and what I do now in my business, I felt I could help him. So I put my hand up.
Could I ask what you do as a business? Like, what is your sort of profession?
Sure. When I left Adidas, I was managing director of the business there. So I'm very much into the business of sport, mm-hmm. With a marketing background. And when I left Adidas, I stayed in sport and the business of sport, but into a business that I was a part owner in. So we own a number of health clubs and a number of five-a-side football centres around the country. Okay. So we operate those. So it's, you know, it's staying in a world that I enjoy, but making some money for myself rather than other people.
No, it's always the best way. So obviously, you know, with the pitch, then if you've owned five a side centres, you must have a lot of experience that you could have brought to the table with that.
Yeah, exactly. I know the people that can help. We have people look at it for us, pull some favours, lots of things that went in the background there that probably people wouldn't know that helped us. You know, get the right plan in place, the right support, got the FA on board, got grants involved. Definitely helped.
In that light, the pitch has been going on for quite a period of time, hasn't it? There's been rumours circulating around the club for at least the time I've been there, over, you know, nearly 3 seasons. Could you tell us about, you know, you said you've got the FA involved, how you've managed to get it to a point where we've actually now got a playing surface?
As you can imagine, George invested quite a bit of money originally in the pitch when he came in. He not only did he save the club in terms of acquiring it, but he also invested in the infrastructure. And that included the bar under the stand and the work he did to the stand and also the pitch. And I know he had quite a lot of ambition for that pitch to serve the community, which is great. And actually, I know that you, from running Knoxwood and also in our business, you can run a whole football club on a 3G pitch. When I picked this up with Calvin, it was clear to me that the contractors that built the pitch had done it in a very substandard way. It wasn't fit for purpose. And as you know, I didn't see it, but as you will all know, it was all weather pitch was flooding, which doesn't seem to ring true, does it?
No.
What we decided to do, and the reason it's taken some time, is that we had to go through quite a battle with the contractor for them to admit to responsibility. And even at the end of it, they still didn't. And it was becoming quite difficult for us because the FA and the FIFA were no longer prepared to credit the pitch. So we wouldn't have been able to play on it. But because they understood our situation, we were given an emergency grant from the Football Foundation that contributed a substantial amount of money for us to find some match funding for it and redevelop the pitch. They took 4 weeks to approve that grant, which would normally take 9 to 10 months. They did it because they sympathised with our cause. They knew that we were a club that was credible. They understood our case and supported us. And you often hear about not much money going into grassroots football. There's, you know, the Premier League this and the Football Foundation that. But I have to say, there is lots of money out there and lots of people willing to support us from the FA, from the Football Foundation, the Premier League. You have to know where to find it, and that's sometimes the challenge. But it's there, and we went to find the grants. They support us big time at the FA. There's a guy called Mark Pover in particular, the technical head at the FA at the time, who really did help us drive that project. So we had at the time, what was going on was a legal battle with the contractor. We were trying to keep quiet the fact that we were trying to raise a substantial amount of money as a grant, because we wouldn't want to hinder that conversation either. We also didn't want to compromise the club in any way, shape or form about the FA's or the FIFA's view of the pitch itself and that it wasn't playable, because that could have also raised quite a lot of questions. There's lots of things I wanted to say, but especially with the legal stuff and the financial stuff, you kind of just have to, you know, you just have to keep quiet, knowing that the bigger picture will come out and everyone will understand eventually. You know, you take some knocks along the way on that as well. But I just had to take the bigger picture, the bigger view on it. And suffice to say that the money came in alongside all the work we've done with the floodlights as well, and the ground in the far corner, the northwest, with all the segregation capability now. Basically what we've done, and one of my key targets was to get the ground fit for purpose to compete in the National League structure, and it is now. We could go and play in the National League South with the pitch and the facilities that we have, which is a huge gain that we weren't anywhere close to a year ago.
You say for the National South, what would the ground need to have done to it to make it fit for National?
The only major difference to play at that level is that we need 500 seats undercover.
Okay.
And I think the number that we have is 461 in the main stand, and we can't actually find any more space to put any more in there, so we would have to build another stand. The challenge there is that and it's certainly something we can meet, is that any one stand has to have a minimum of 100 seats. So basically what we're saying is that to go up to the level above, we'd have to build another stand with a minimum of 100 seats to go up to the National League. That's the main difference.
I feel another crowdfunder coming on.
Well, let's try and get promoted first, Pete.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because we failed at two attempts through no fault of our own.
Yeah.
With all this, what's happened with COVID, and obviously the money that's been spent on the ground and the ground improvements, the bills that still have to be paid and everything associated with the club, what sort of position are we coming into next season? Is it one where Adam's budget is going to be shrunk? You know, players might be asked to take a drop in wages, or is it a case of we're going to come back in the same sort of position and we're going to get through this together as a club? With all the fans' support and everything, is it going to be that sort of scenario, or tighten the older purse strings?
I think, firstly, Pete, we've got to say thank you for nailing Hinch down for another 3 years. That's the first thing.
That's the first thing, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's that. Well, you know, there were a few items on our radar that we needed to nail from an off the pitch point of view. One of it, obviously, was to upgrade the pitch so that we could play national football without any more challenges around what the stadium looked like. And also to give the supporters and all other visitors to the ground a better experience, which they'll have now with everything that's been done. We obviously, in that, we also wanted to cement and future-proof Hinch and the manager of the first team. So, yeah, getting that three-year deal with Hinch was brilliant news for the club. Probably people need to understand that behind the scenes, nothing stopped. We were really going for it in many different ways, not least also bringing in a 9-member committee, a brand new committee that we knitted together to bring all the skills and knowledge and know-how that can actually run this club as a national in the National League structure. So we were really making sure that whilst things were quiet, we were actually really busy. And I suppose going back to your question, Pete, I think we are in a relatively strong position because although we haven't been taking revenue, nor have our costs been that great because of the furlough schemes, that the venue's been shut down. We've had the benefit of some grants, which we've used wisely to help us manage the site and keep costs tight. So we're coming out of the season. Okay. The challenge we've got is with season ticket holders who have paid us money that we've had to spend, in order to survive through the year, or sponsorship money that's come in during the year that we've had to use to survive. Some of that clearly is we're going to need to provide those sponsors and the supporters with value next year without, any more money coming back. So I suppose all the clubs face that challenge, is not having some of the revenues because we've got to pass it across into next season. But as far as Hinch's budget's concerned, and I can tell you this because I've told this to Nathan, the club is about to go through its budget process. We go to the end of June, so we need a new budget in place for July for the new season. And we've had a discussion as a committee, and we are going to do everything we possibly can to ensure stability with the playing budget. Our issue as a club has never been and isn't about how much we spend. We don't overspend. We're not a club that spends lots of money. Our challenge as a club that I've seen is that there's much, much more revenue opportunity, much more in line with other clubs do. So we will make sure we bring the revenue streams in that is needed to support the playing budget, not the other way around. The cost can't drive the decision here. We will make sure that the revenue comes in. And as part of that, we've brought in a commercial director in Dave Cucaracha, whose son, Luca, has played for the club, has been on loan. I know Dave from Loxford, and Dave has done a fantastic job in starting to professionalise our proposition to partners, bringing in more sponsorship. We've already had more money come in. We've had much, much more wider interest. And I think Dave can play a really key role there to help bring more revenue into the club. I'm expecting to be able to say to Hinch, same budget, go.
Excellent.
That would be excellent news, yeah. Because like you say, you know, with the no income and not being able to play and all the rest of it, fans do worry that, hold on, what's next season going to bring? It's always a concern. But no, that's really good news as far as I'm concerned.
I think it was that worry though, Pete. Like, we've said it. You always worried at how close we were on the two occasions to getting this promotion. I mean, Barry, what is your view on what the FA did? I mean, I know you've got to sort of tread a bit carefully, but, we've been quite outspoken about, a lot of things the FA have done. Do you think it could have been handled better for us non-league?
That's the other thing, of course. All through this issue where we were challenging the FA, we've got on the other side the FA putting, supporting us big time to get our pitch done. Yeah. And they're the sorts of sensitivities that you're having to work with all the time. But that's all said and done. I've come out and said this before, and I'll repeat it. And we did support quite a big campaign in the first season, 1920, where we played 34 games and sat at the top, as did South Shields. And we worked with South Shields, Hastings, and a few other clubs to really spearhead a legal challenge to the FA Council. We were part of that, very much at the forefront of that. It was our opinion, my opinion, and the committee's, that we understood why, you might decide to cancel, to stop the season because of the health reasons. We all get that. And nothing should stand in the way of that decision. But to null and void it, and null and void it so quickly, when everything in all the history went, you can't use anything. None of the data could be used.
Apart from they kept the fines and the points.
Yeah,
and that.
It does. I think within a few days of the decision to null and void the season, which was really quick, partly to protect clubs, the furlough scheme was announced, and that could have made quite a difference. So I think the difference with this last announcement, again, you know, people above my pay grade and responsibilities have to make decisions about the health and well-being of our communities. Mm-hmm. So we stopped the season. This time round, everyone's made a sensible decision to curtail the season, which means the data could be used. There's flexibility now.
And so that must be a kick in the teeth for you, though. Like, there must be a kick in the teeth, especially if you add this season to last season, that would have been enough games pretty much to sort of, you know, guarantee that promotional points per game.
Well, I've done the maths, believe it or not, and we played 42 games across those two seasons, which is one full season. I think it was 91 or 92 points that we got. Not only did with that, when we were top in both seasons, not only were we won promotion out of our league, we actually won the most points per game across anyone else at step three in the country. So if anyone's got a gripe about this, we have. We definitely have. But the most important thing is that the bodies that made the decisions second time round learnt from the first time. They listened, I think, and decided to keep the data that they could use for the future. So if we have a problem next year in the winter, they can come back and use the data from this last season. And I think that's a sensible decision. But it has given us, it will give us another season to get things off the pitch where we want to get them to. It's where I want to get the club to. It does give us another season to get things right so that when we do go up, as and when we do go up, we can match the team on the pitch with the performance off the pitch and make it sustainable. We've got a chance to look at some things that probably we wouldn't have been able to have done had we gone up, and it was would have been quite a challenge.
What do you actually think of the FA fining these clubs? Like Dover got a £40,000 fine. They're saying they're not going to pay it. So I don't know where they stand on that. At the same time, you know, they're in a position where they're saying we can't afford to play. So you've got to have a bit of sympathy for a club that feels they're in that position.
Well, of course, I sympathise with the club that are in a situation that can't afford to compete. It's an awful situation for them to be in. And I can't imagine it was an easy decision for them to say, you know, we're not going to play. We're going to have to step down from fulfilling our fixtures. So I absolutely sympathise with their cause, and a 40 grand fine is, that could be the end of them or push them down a few leagues. And that's really disappointing for them. And I really sympathise. I think from the league's point of view, what do you do? I mean, you want to keep the integrity of the season going. If clubs did that at will, then you've got a problem on your hand because you've got no control either. You know, where does it stop? But I just think this season, the circumstances are so extraneous, so different, so difficult. You'd like to think there was some greater sympathy shown to everybody's problems.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
I've just got no words for it.
I'm trying to be diplomatic here.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a difficult situation because you can't sit there and be so outspoken, because we all know, you know, they love throwing out fines and we don't want to incur anything that. To be honest, you look at it and think, right, we've kind of got over the fact now that the season, we're not going to be promoted. We're going to be back in the Eastman Premier. I think the future is bright, pun intended, with everything that went on last summer. You must be so proud to see what the crowdfunder has raised, and now obviously see the stuff going on at the ground. We've got the bricks. What were your overall thoughts on the crowdfunder? Were you surprised? Were you shocked how good the response was?
I was overwhelmed by the amount of support we received. I wasn't surprised, and I don't mean that in a derogatory whatsoever. I was not surprised because I knew just how capable this support base and community were. Yeah. In supporting the club. I've known the club all my life, so I know what's possible. One of the reasons I came back to help the club was because I knew that we had real potential, and all the indicators point to a fantastic support base, a good business community, a club steeped in history with good reputations around the non-league arena. So I knew what the community was capable of. But what I would say to you is that it was such a... That got kicked us off. That's what got everything going for the whole campaign to get the pitch sorted as well behind it. It meant that we could match some grants, which was fundamental for us to be able to do the whole project. So seeing some of the people that donated, where they were in the world, ex-players, ex-supporters that have moved on, people that probably are finding it difficult financially but wanted to put some money into the club. We've had season ticket holders that said, don't worry about what I put in last year. I can afford to pay again and buy again next year. All those things are what this club's about. And there's lots of people like it. And that's why I'm so excited about the future. I was so thrilled with the response that we had to the Futures Bright. Yeah. And we, as you said earlier, we might want to do that again. And I wouldn't be surprised if people, you know, if they understood the reasons for and what we're trying to do, I'd have no surprises that they wouldn't come back and do the same again.
What are your thoughts on this forthcoming season, whenever it starts? I mean, we're going to be pushing for promotion again. Do you think we'll do it?
Well, certainly we've done it once, certainly, and we've proven it. And we've proven it on the player budgets that we have and the model that we have with young players and the way Hinch wants to run the club with Nathan. And obviously in all of these things, it's like anything, you can only control the controllables. And what we can do is make sure that our squad is as strong as it can be. We know the management infrastructure is going to be there. We know that the surface and the facilities are stronger. The budgets, if they're protected, there's no reason why we can't be competitive again next year. You just don't know quite what other clubs, you know, are going to inject into their own budgets. There might be less, there might be more, and it's very difficult. That's the unknown that we have. The reason we asked Hinch to come back for three more years is because we don't want to put him under the unnecessary pressure of doing it all in one year. This is a long-term project. Once we get up, we intend to stay there, so we want to be sustainable. So it's important that if we go up knowing that we can stay up.
Are there any clubs that you sort of look that have done that? I mean, I'm thinking in my head, Dorking and stuff, who have sort of seemed to sustain themselves at that level. Obviously, the playing budget is a lot more than what we're on. But, you know, is there a club you model yourselves on to be like?
Well, first of all, I think you highlight a big point here for me. One of the things coming into this club is that we kind of reference ourselves and benchmark ourselves against teams around us geographically or in the league. And you could argue in many ways that we're underperforming as a club because we have a bigger business community than anyone else in our league, certainly in the top half of the league above as well. Our support base, our average gates, certainly are in the top 25% of the league above. You know, and our manager and this coaching team are more than capable of competing in the league above and beyond.
Definitely.
So one of the things I want to bring to the club, certainly on the committee, but if we can extend that out, is to start benchmarking other clubs that are maybe more successful, maybe geographically wider than our Sussex vicinity. I think if you take a model like Woking, and I don't know the ins and outs of Woking, but they've managed, for the size of population, not far off where we are, they've managed to sustain National League football for many, many years and upgraded their facilities as they've gone. And you can look at Eastleigh, you can look at Maidstone United. Lots of clubs that have similar support structures, support base, population sizes, business communities to us that actually are not really on our radar. And that's where I want to benchmark. You know, when we put a sponsorship program together, what do they do? How do they structure their revenue streams? What's their cost base? How can we do things differently and measure them and benchmark their success and their standards? And I think that would actually drag us up into the leagues above. And I think we could comfortably live in those leagues above if we start to bring in those standards and expectations. It's going to be a more difficult world because we're obviously not going to get everything our way when you start to test yourself a lot harder. But I think it would be the only way we could probably go up and stay up is if we start to benchmark bigger, better clubs that are much more in line with our own stature.
On that point, I think that's why, you know, yourself and the rest of the board have done a fantastic job in getting Adam to sign on. With Adam's policy of bringing through the younger players, how important is that for the club from a financial point of view? Because obviously it saves you having to go out and sign somebody and then pick up the wage bill for that person.
I think it's central, and that's one of the reasons we wanted him to stay. There are two kind of polarised models in non-league football and quite a lot in between. The one model is, and you mentioned a team earlier, and you put big budgets in there, and you have very experienced players that can drag you through the league system, which probably requires on benefactors because it's very difficult to sustain those sorts of revenues to make that work. That's not where Worthing Football Club is. It's not got the benefactor that would, nor would we necessarily want one, because wouldn't it be great to rely on our stature based on the club, its supporters, its local businesses, its sponsorships and everything else that makes it sustainable. And as part of that, we've invested in Adam, and Hinch has a philosophy which means that young players want to play for him. He shows them real faith and commitment. Yes, they are cheaper versus some of the more experienced non-league players, but he gives them the experience they crave at a young age to play senior football. He believes in them. And there's so many examples of where that belief has come back and rewarded the club. So it's a philosophy that's embedded in how we operate.
Really, let's just look at Finn Stevens, for example. He got released by Arsenal. He's now representing Wales, under 21, season after he left Worthing. Not even a full season after he left Worthing. I mean, that just sums it up. And it's going to be so good for players to be attracted to the club for that reason.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, the fact that Finn was given, you know, first team football, I think it was at the age of 16. It was 16, I'm sure he played. And, you know, for him to go on to do what he's done is fantastic for him. But it would also give other young players the belief and faith that they can do the same. And look, we may not make money from that model because players are too young, but there's lots we can gain as well in our relationships with other clubs and with young players wanting to come to play for us because of the chance Hinch gives. It's central to what we're doing. It's fundamental to our model. And if we were to reverse it to the other model that I mentioned, I think that would be unsustainable for the club. Mm. It's unsustainable for most clubs. So it's all about sustainability. And to do that, it needs to be around the model that we operate today, just on a bigger stage.
If we could find somehow another 500 fans a week for home games, is there any sort of business model where, you know, this is something the club is looking at to try and get more people through the gate? And if that was the case, would that make Worthing more sustainable?
Well, look, the biggest single revenue driver for us is the gate. And if you were to add 500, all that's profit to the club because all the operating costs of running the day are already in. So, you know, I've just worked it out. 500, if it's an average of £10, and I'm using round numbers here, it's £5,000 a week. Absolutely. 500 supporters would make a huge difference to the way the club could operate. I think there are many other revenue streams that we can bring in as well, which is why it's almost like a project revenue thing for us. Can we more bars, perhaps? Could we? And which is why I've opened that.
Yes, please. Corner. Yes, please. Yes, please.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. More revenue.
Can you put a pump up by our commentary table up in the so we don't have to go and queue at half time, because that could be annoying when you've got to get on air.
The longest straw you've seen.
That's fine. That's fine.
But you know, there are many revenues, all sorts of revenue streams we can attack. The obvious one is the supporters and getting more people to the games regularly, but more bars or more options to sell food and drink, more sponsorship, more people playing on the new pitch. Loads and loads of opportunity. Again, why I think this is something that's deliverable. What we're trying to achieve is deliverable.
Is there a plan for the club to go out and try and attract these people at all?
I can't say we sat in a room to discuss that strategy specifically, because there's quite a lot of other things that we needed to do and sort and solve problems first. But it's an obvious thing that we should be looking at doing down the line. Now that we've got a ground that's presentable, we'll give a good experience that looks attractive and players are going to enjoy the lights. Now that's all there, and we've got facilities to service people, more toilets, bars and food outlets at the ground, and we've got the segregation. I think we've now got the basic infrastructure where we can have a lot more confidence that we could service and attract more supporters in. There are lots of little ways we can do that, and we will spend some time working out the best policy, and we can probably go and talk to you and some of our supporter groups to get some advice on what we might be, you know, good ideas there.
Adam plays such an attractive style of football. You watch some of these other teams in our league and they either just sit behind the ball or they just whack it up the pitch. But, you know, our players go out on that pitch with a plan to actually play football. I think that's why, you know, people do come back. I came up there once. I watched a game and I was impressed.
One of the reasons that really drove me to get that new pitch in, because I couldn't watch too many more games playing out the back with a ball that was not level and flat and rolling properly, because we weren't doing our job for the first
thing. Oh, Barry, when I saw the pitch, I couldn't believe it. Mike Tanner was showing me the bumps, and it was unbelievable. I was like, how have we not had so many more injuries? Then, you know, it was unbelievable.
It was, and I could see them, and it wasn't conducive to the way Adam played. So even more credit to him and the players for sticking with that format, that way of playing.
So let's hope the pitch will make it 10 times better and the squad will be 10 times worse and boss the league even more.
Yeah, well, our home record now should be as good as our away record, hopefully.
Yeah. maybe an FA Cup run or something against Spurs would be nice at Woodside Road. Can you imagine that? That would sort us out for a few years, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be nice.
The last game we attended, Three Bridges away, bit of an incident behind the goal. Was there any comeback on the club from that? I know somebody's been banned, but, you know, was there any repercussions from the FA or anything like that?
I would have to check with Vass, our club secretary, only because it's not something we've discussed in the last few months. Now, that tells me nothing did come back that we need to worry about. It was a concerning incident, and yeah, the club's made its move and done what it needs to do with the supporter involved, or the supporters. But I don't believe, I think the relationship we have with the FA and the way it was communicated, I think we were okay.
It's the last taste of Worthing action we had since the lockdown. It wasn't a pleasant one night. We lost the match and everything. It's like we said after, it had to be that, didn't it? When we were on the air, it's like, Pete, it really had to be that, didn't it? Could we have not gone out on a high? Not thinking that would have been the last bit of football we saw for this season, though.
I know. It was a shame to go out on that.
But the crazy world we live in right now.
But you know, I think, you know, from the club's point of view, I'm really pleased that it was dealt with so quickly, and those fans were, you know, told they were banned, because, you know, we don't want that sort of behaviour. And I think it's testament to the other people that have pointed the people out that were doing it. So if, you know, if there is bad behaviour around, don't be scared to report it, because we don't need incidents like this.
No, agreed. We were, yeah, the committee was very clear about what its view was, and the right people were spoken to get the right information, and decisions were made quickly, and we made a very clear stance on our position on something as bad taste as that. So hopefully it's dealt with. We've had little incidents as well down at the ground in recent weeks with people getting over the gate and kicking the ball about, and you know, all those really? things. But yeah, I've heard Pete was one of them, actually.
Yeah, I gave him a leg up, mate, so it's not my fault I ran away.
It's just because I lost my hair.
Hooligan Pete, but...
That's been something going around the country. All of our football centres, people are breaking into them or climbing over fences you're better off just leaving the blooming gates open, actually.
Barry, thank you so much for your time. It's been great to catch up with you again, and sure, I could go out for Pete as well and all the listeners. Fascinating insight into yourself and pitch situation. But the most important thing is, and let's hope nothing delays the start of the season. So we're looking forward to catch up with you, hopefully in person, in the bar, without a mask on and a pint of beer in our hands before too long.
Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure to talk to you guys and catch up again.
This is the Rebel Yell podcast.
So now we're joined by Nathan Bowen, back coaching again for the first time in quite a few months, Nathan, isn't it?
Yeah, I think our last session would have been, it was pre-Christmas.
Yeah.
When everything we was expecting to get back. But yeah, not since December.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a long old time.
How's the facilities for the pitch? Because I've seen pictures and it looks beautiful. I'm sure the players are chomping at the bit.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. The pitch is unbelievable. It's actually flat, which is a good start. But, you know, that was a big hurdle for us to get over, completing that pitch. You know, at one point it looked like we was going to have to ground share. Obviously, we played a game at Horsham. We've got 7 or 8 teams that we had to find training for in that time. So, yeah, really, really good to get the pitch back. But also the change rooms have had a bit of a revamp. Hopefully, you know, when we're allowed, you guys can have a look at that. We've got new offices, got a new food block. So, yeah, the facilities as a whole have had a bit of an upgrade, which is nice, yeah.
So on to the playing part.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't play. He's already told me he's playing on Friday.
I'm not allowed. I haven't got a squad number. I do want one. Obviously, the lads are chomping at a bit to get on the pitch. So what's sort of ahead for the next couple of months?
The first thing really is just to get back and for their well-being and just to see the lads and have a bit of fun. So yeah, March and April will be just getting back, getting rid of that ring rust of not doing any football for 3 months. Obviously a lot of them keep themselves really fit. They're a great squad. They look after themselves, so they're not going to come back unfit. But as you know, football and trainers is a lot different to running 5Ks and 10Ks every week. So the first few weeks is literally about just getting back and enjoying the game again, which we've all missed. And then after that, once we get into May time, you start thinking about next season and recruitment, might look at some trialists. Obviously, we've got some really good young players coming through our 16s, 18s and academy. That'll be a good opportunity in sort of May time, April, May, to mix those guys in and see which ones are ready to support the squad now, and which ones we need to find loans for, which ones need to just, you know, stay and play in the youth teams. So it gives us a really good time to assess where our young players are at, and any other young players in Sussex that are around. You know, we like to feel that we're the best place for young talent in Sussex. So yeah, we'll use May for that, and then obviously June off. Don't want to be going too much when you go into the new season, and then back in July for the start of pre-season and go and attack the season again.
One of the biggest fears, like you say, you're going to do some training sessions and everything, is, and as you said, playing football to running 5K is a totally different ball game because of twisting and turning, etc. Is it a fear that, you know, someone might get some sort of horrible injury and be out for 6 months? Is that a consideration at the moment?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a fear, but it is definitely a consideration into how we plan the training sessions. We're not going to be doing any running in terms of long distance or, you know, cardiovascular running in the first few weeks. And a lot of our training sessions are short and sharp. Like I say, it's an introduction. They've been away for 3 months and it's about getting the love back. It's not about running 20-minute, 30-minute sessions and running them into the ground and seeing how fit they are, because that's not important. It's about getting back, letting them see the new facilities, letting them enjoy each other's company. You know, haven't been able to do that. And building up to it. Ultimately, the fitness side comes in pre-season. This period that we've got now, they don't have to get themselves fully fit. That's what July and the start of August is for. Obviously, the start of the season has been released at August 14th, I believe. So as long as they stick to that, that means they'll have 6 weeks of training. That's where we'll start doing our fitness stuff. This is about just a little bit of pre-season preparation, getting them used to the ball again. Obviously, we've got our physios, we've got strength conditioning coaches, we've got the advice from Dan Ag and the guys at Ultimate Fitness there who use our facility as well. And we put all of that consideration into our training. So hopefully, fingers crossed, touch wood, no one should get any bad injuries.
Good to hear. Yeah. So is there no chance of any sort of friendlies coming up to sort of have a bit of a ground opening or something like that with a new pitch and facilities? Or is that on the back burner, as it were?
It's on the back burner. There is, but ultimately, if you're going to open the pitch, you want there to be as many fans as possible. We don't want to do a grand opening with 20 fans or whatever it is. We want to get proper, you know, good fixtures down here. Get the fans back in when it's safe to do so, by the way. We don't want to rush that. We have to be confident that everyone's going to be safe in the environment. And then once that happens, which, you know, fingers crossed, June looks like it's still the date and it looks like the vaccination rollout is going well. People are looking forward to getting out. That's when we would be looking to do proper friendlies. We have got the option of doing in-house friendlies and stuff, which we might do a couple. But again, coming back now isn't about playing loads and loads of games after you've been missing for 3 months. It's about steady build-up. There will be one or two in-house games, for example, where again, we can look at our 18s, our academy, our first team, or our 16s. So we might do in-house things. A couple of weeks down the track, we might play a couple of local teams behind closed doors. But really, for us, the grand opening has to be in July when we come back for our first sort of pre-season game. That way everyone gets to enjoy it with us. I know there's a few people that can come in. We had a few external sessions this week. We had soccer sixes. We've got walking football back. We've got a few community groups back. So a few people will get to see the facility. But in terms of grand opening, I think we need to do that as big as we can and get as many people in as we can to show the support to the lads in July.
Adam was saying, like, you know, the players have been chomping at a bit, some of the younger teams, to, you know, asking for more training sessions and everything. How pleasing is that for you as a director of football at the club?
It's really pleasing, and it shows that we've done something right in terms of our recruitment, first and foremost. Like I say, there's not many players here who aren't itching to come back and do extra. They all want to do extra. That's the norm. So I'd say the recruitment has been really good, and actually the environment that we set and the players set and the senior players, you know, Aaron Racine and Darren Buds and Alex Parsons and all those sort of guys, they set a really good environment for everyone else. So, yeah, it is pleasing to see that, and hopefully that continues through the season and pre-season when it gets a bit tougher as well.
Adam was also saying that he'd be quite happy with the squad that we've got at the moment for going into next season. Do you share those thoughts?
I think we sort of proved that the group of players that we had can compete. You know, we've had one and a, you know, basically over two seasons, we've completed one full season. Both times we were competing at the top. So I think it's fair to say that at least the core of the players we've got are more than good enough to compete at this level, and they've shown that many times. So, you know, if we go into the next season with the same squad, we'd be expecting them to compete again. I think that's fair to say. They're 1 year on. In terms of experience, they've had to go through a really tough time. They'll be better for it in terms of their mental strength and fortitude to come back and attack it again. But in terms of quality, I don't think there's any doubt that our squad is one of the best in the league. It's about, yeah, having that belief to go and do it again. Obviously there was a lot of frustration in the first sort of curtailment or null and voiding of the league. There was a lot of frustration because they'd worked so hard to get into that position. So it's about putting that behind you and using it as fuel to go again. But yeah, in terms of actual ability and application and showing they're good enough to go and win this division, I think they've proved that.
And with the curtailments of last season, yeah, and the null and void of season before, yeah, was it easier for the players to take last season as we hadn't played as many games?
No, I don't think it was easier. What I would say is we'd gone through that process already, so it wasn't as much of a surprise, but it doesn't make it any less difficult to take, because ultimately we feel the second one, actually, you go, well, that sort of makes sense. You know, we're not far into the season. Look at the fiasco that's happened in the leagues above us. Yeah, yeah. It's an absolute joke how these people run the leagues. It's, you know, a lot of effort and time. I know people say money, a lot of money's gone into it, but people's time has gone into that. But, you know, and our owner George, think how much he's sunk into the club in terms of time and effort over the last 4 or 5 years, and there's no consideration for that. People think it's just about money or getting promoted. It's not about that. It's about having almost your life's work meaning nothing. Yep. You know, people are, you know, doing all they can for their football clubs all around the country. So the second time around, they've curtailed it. I feel they should have had a plan in place. It was fairly obvious that there could have been a second wave and, yeah, third wave. Everyone knew that. Yeah. So you need to have a plan in place, and they didn't have a plan in place. So you'd think after, that's the frustration again. We understand it, and actually everyone's safety comes above everything. Yeah. It comes above us getting promoted. It comes above money. It comes above everything. So it's important that we kept everyone safe. However, it was, I think you could have predicted that there would have been an issue again. And I think before we started the season, our leagues and the leagues above should have had a contingency plan, and they shouldn't have null and voided the first season. To think that you can null and void a season, go back immediately from a global pandemic and everything was going to be rosy, is madness. You had to expect that there was going to be another wave or some sort of implications. And, you know, they sent out questionnaires and what would you want to do and do you want to carry on this, and all that sort of stuff. And then they null and voided it anyway. And then the same thing happened again. And I just think it was bad leadership on their part. So I know that's a long-winded answer, but I think we understood the curtailment. We understood it for safety reasons. We just were frustrated with the leadership of the people running our leagues.
Obviously, before the season was curtailed, we hadn't long signed Omar and Danny Papo. So obviously this time that you're having now, before mid-season break. Yeah. So basically it's going to give them more of a chance to integrate into the squad and get to know the way we play, so we can expect a bit more of them when the season starts in August.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same for every single player. Obviously they're good players, they came in, they showed glimpses of what they can do. But it's the same with every player. We've got Shaq, we had Mo Diallo for a little bit, we've had Leon Moore, we've had young players who would have come through, people like Joe Ryan. There's lots of different players that we feel, had the season gone on, might have started to impact the season. It's really difficult to predict what's going to happen going into next season, because of course you've got another wave of under-18s coming through, who are all fighting for a shirt. You've got another wave of people around Sussex, you know, might be getting released.
Can you stop saying wave?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's imprinted in my head. I need to. But, you know, there's, look at the players that we've recruited in the past. Yeah. A lot of them have a link with Brighton. So if there's boys at Brighton that are getting released at under-18s, under-23s, there could be more loanees, more Kwamis and more Marley Mirandas and other people that we've had in the past. So there's going to be a lot of competition. So, yeah, I don't know is the answer who's going to be in the squad. What I would say is any single player that has represented us in the past, we have full faith in them to go and do the business on the pitch. But ultimately, it's a competitive game. And, yeah, they've got to show it in pre-season. Like I said, the first sort of month or so isn't going to be about that. It'll about be getting back, enjoying themselves, playing some football, enjoying the pitch. Eventually, when we're allowed to, seeing the new facilities in terms of training rooms and whatever. And then we can think about all the rest of the stuff as we go.
Excellent. Obviously, we've got the younger teams, the youth teams, the under-18s, under-16s, etc., etc. Yeah. How much of an inspiration is it for them seeing players like Finn and Kwame going up and doing what they're doing at a higher level? And, you know, it's something that they really can set their sights to and hope to attain with the coaching that's going on here and what a professional setup that we've got.
Hopefully a really big inspiration. And you know, again, there's something that we want to do a lot of. We've had Omar in the past make the jump. You know, David Adjaboy, is it looking like Sutton hopefully become, you know, a pro club or League Two club very soon? And yeah, we each year we've taken it further. And, you know, we had Kwame, we had Finn, we had Little Mo going to Gambia. Yeah. And ultimately, we feel that we provide an environment for all players to develop. So that's the key, is for young players to see that we will work with you as a person. And whether that's Finn playing for Wales or whether that's someone playing, you know, county football, actually, that doesn't matter. What matters is we're getting them to the highest level we can get them and they can attain. And I feel the young players do see Finn and Kwame and think, God, it wasn't that long ago. I was training with those guys. I was playing with those guys and seeing them break into the men's team and then seeing them go off to pro clubs, and not only going to pro clubs but then establishing themselves in those clubs. It does go to show that you're not as far away as you think. Sometimes it, you know, there's a huge chasm between Isthmian level football and, you know, championship and what have you. But actually, if you've got the talent and the application and the belief and the right environment to develop, You're not as far away as you think. I think non-league, especially going forward, the one thing COVID has done is there's going to be a lot of planning around finance and budgets, and there's going to be a huge spotlight. There's been a spotlight on the non-league in the last few years, as we saw. I think the next couple of years there's going to be even more of a spotlight. And if you can get in to a men's team at this level and showcase your ability on a regular basis, people will notice that. If you're playing as a 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 year old regularly, doing the business at the top end of the Isthmian leagues, then someone will notice and you can get opportunities. So, yeah, hopefully that will push all our boys on and we can have another success story next season.
Okay, thanks for that, Nathan.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'll get you back to training now.
Love, thanks. Cheers,
mate. The Rebel Yell Podcast.
So joining us now, we have said it is at the right time for the second podcast to be dropped. The new women's manager, John Donoghue. John, I've pronounced your name right, firstly, is that correct?
You have.
That's a good start then. Welcome.
It is for you, James.
Yeah, I normally get things wrong and normally make myself look a complete fool, but at least I got the first one right.
Ask him how he says Folkestone.
Folkestone, yeah, I get wound up by Pete. Welcome to Worthing Football Club and welcome to the Rebel Yell podcast and the Rebel Yell brand. How's it going? How have you been?
Yeah, good, thanks. Obviously, I've done a couple of sessions now with the players, so that's been exciting to get back. They're a great group, so obviously the recruitment was fantastic for a team that was deserved to win the league, basically, I think, last season and heading that way this season. So they've been fantastic on the two sessions that I've taken.
Has it been quite a whirlwind for you since getting the job? You know, obviously Michelle left and within a couple of weeks we had you lined up. So I guess it was very quick thing.
Yeah, well, credit to Michelle. She had already just spoken to me anyway about the potential of coming in. And when obviously she left, she actively said to Nathan Bowen, contact John, more than happy for you to follow that through. So he did, and we obviously chatted with a couple of other board members, and so it was done within sort of a week and a half, 2 weeks, really.
On the squad side of things, John, you said you've had a couple of training sessions. Is it basically the same players as last season, or is it going to be quite a bit of movement?
It's the same players, because the season was paused and then, well, I suppose cut short anyway. They've done a round robin tournament, so the players who were signed on are still signed on for each club. So there is potential movement if you give a notice of approach, as you would approach a player from another team. But the vast majority of players who are playing football are signed on for other clubs. So the squad we have is the squad we have. There are opportunities to try to bring people in, but we're not entered into the games programme because it was felt that was too challenging to juggle. And certainly we needed to offer the players some training sessions and then, you know, gain their views as we've stepped in.
How have the players taken it in terms of, like, you know, obviously they should have been promoted. They did win the league.
Well,
it numerically and not officially, I think it was they needed one more win to actually be crowned as champions, but they were promoted. And then obviously this season that happens, they got off to a great start again. What's the general consensus? Obviously, I'm sure there's a lot of disappointment, but how have they picked themselves up? And is it hard for you?
Yeah, it's been difficult. Sort of I mean, from my perspective, I haven't been able to discuss in length with the players about that. But obviously we mentioned to them that the club is still going to try to apply to go up to the next division.
Excellent.
And I said, obviously the challenge is there. You should have been going up with a medal round your neck and a trophy. And you could see that they were a bit disappointed that they put all that energy in. You know how it is, the away games, the training evenings, and the effort they put in outside was all driven towards trying to get promotion. So, like I say, without being able to discuss that in detail, I know there's a disappointment there that wasn't able to be there because they deserved it, to be fair.
100%.
Oh, absolutely. I went to a lot of games and, you know, they're turning teams over 4-5, 6-0. That day where they actually gained promotion, and at the end of the game, they just, you know, there was no celebrating or anything. They just got in a little huddle, had a chat, because they just sort of knew what was coming the week later when everything was shut down. And it was such an anti-climax to that game. It was, you know, really, really sad to sort of see in a way.
And I'm sure some of the players were committing for like the season or the two seasons to try and achieve that, because obviously there were some good players recruited who moved clubs or dropped down a level to try and move up. And once you've invested all that time into trying to do that and not see that success, even though you know you deserve it, because disappointed.
What is the sort of goal for you now at Worthing? I take it to try and get the women to the highest level, but you know, what's your personal goal in the short term, I'd say?
Yeah, well, the short term is obviously to consolidate on the good work that Michelle did. And the team, the club's done as a to, you know, bring on board a women's team, because the women's team is quite young in terms of the amount of time it's been at the club. So it would be to look to consolidate with the current group. Hopefully we get this application to go up to tier 5. And then I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be trying to be challenging for another promotion. That means that the players need to step up a level, because the teams they're going to be playing, fingers crossed, are going to be more challenging. They're going to be asked to obviously play at a higher level. So it would be to develop the current squad, add to it, because I don't doubt some players have committed for their 2 years, so they may not be there another season. So just really to try to get the whole structure moving forward at the same time. You know, we want to work with the support staff. That's why we brought Kelly in and kept Rad. I've worked with Rad in the past. Kelly's a wonderful coach in the making and a great person. And she's got experience of winning leagues as a player. So that's very helpful. The work with the current board to try to help support and develop and hopefully get some investment from people who want to sponsor the men's team, but also want to invest some time in the women's team. So hopefully I can help support the people who are challenged to do that and then grow it a bit more organically, you know, so everything is moved a long time.
Got a lot of experience with Lewis and the women's team there. They're in a far higher league than us in the women's level. So how do you think that's going to help you guide the Worthing team?
In terms of personally, I know what that level is like. So you've experienced that level. You know the old cliche about building a house. You know what the end result is. So the house doesn't fall down. You've got to make sure that you know where the foundations are and the different elements to get up to there. And that's the experience I have. So I know that level, the higher level, and I know what needs to be done at the highest level. But as I say, it's sensible to look at the steps and not get too far ahead of ourselves because, you know, step six to step two is a huge jump.
And yeah, a bit exciting if you could get us up to the same level as Lewis, because they have such a good following, don't they, on a Sunday as well?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one thing that told me about this job is that there's a great fan base at Worthing, and I believe that fan base can be encouraged to support the women as well. So not only current fans, but bring new supporters in. And having more supporters will enable us to be able to develop, really want the community to get behind. And I think that can only help you be more successful.
It was one game that we had. Michelle done a promotion which took tickets around the schools, and we had actually 300 fans down there. The one ladies' game on.
Oh, was that for the Crawley Wasps Cup game?
I think it possibly was
but yeah, I think it was.
But it was absolutely incredible. And then you go over next week and you're back down to the 40 or 50. Yeah. So you're like, the disappointment comes over you again. So it would be nice to draw the fans in, get more kids involved, especially young girls at school now, because the FA, they're spending a lot of money and there's going to be a lot of televised games on women's football from next year. So I think it really is an ideal opportunity to be able to go to these schools and get these kids involved and get them down the ground every week.
I think you're right. I think that investment in the community, certainly there's a big sort of, I suppose, catchment area, not only for players, because there's been a lot of good players coming through at Worthing, but also getting the surrounding areas to know that there is a women's team. They play on Sunday. So if you aren't able to get along on a Saturday or you want to go on a Saturday and then come along on Sunday, there's a good level of football on a wonderful pitch. You know, great environment.
What do you think of the pitch? Because we've asked everyone, and obviously it's the latest all singing, all dancing part of Woodside Road. What's your first impressions on it?
Yeah, it's lovely. I think it sets it off. I like the 3Gs where they don't have all the different lines of the different sizes of pitches on, so they've got just a football pitch on there. So that's good. But no, it's lovely, and I think because it seems quite can't say thick the grass because it's quite tight the 3G. Then once you get a bit of water on that, the ball is going to zip. So at the moment we've been training in dry conditions, and you really have to stick the pass in, so it travels through. So in the past that sometimes is challenging when you go then to a grass pitch where it skids along off the surface or hits a little bump and kicks up, and then you have to try and control it. But yeah, it's been great. It's different than a couple of 3Gs that I've been on. Like I say, the grass seems a bit thicker, or the plastic seems a bit thicker.
It's interesting to know that. I never really thought.
And when you fall over, it doesn't hurt so much, maybe.
There you go. More comfort, more padding.
Well, that was yeah.
Yeah, nothing worse than friction burns down the thigh. It's painful. So, John, did you actually play football yourself?
Yeah, so I think probably my youth team coach got it right by saying to me, John, you're captain of the team, but have you thought about coaching at all? And I should have taken that as a cue that I was probably better at coaching. So I played for Bogley Youth Team, played for Pagham, Wick, Portfield when they were around, so sort of county league level. Went out to the States for a short time, played out there. So, what was it Greaves he said? He couldn't trap a bag of cement. That's probably... I was, an adequate level to be able to demonstrate. But the coach I had used to work with the Football Association, and he worked in coach education. So I'd like to think that he thought I would be a wonderful coach and a wonderful player, but I think he was steering me down the coaching quite early.
Because looking at your history here, obviously you've been at Southampton, you've been at Bournemouth, you've been at Brighton as well, with various positions at big clubs, to be honest.
Yeah, so like I say, well, I started at, initially I was doing like what most people do, playing, and I had a different job, but I did go through my coaching badges quite young. So I started coaching probably around 21. So I started my coaching badges as I was still playing, and I set up a team and some coaching sessions with a friend of mine. So developed that. And then I got the job as a community manager at Southampton Football Club, but I also interviewed for to take the women's team. So the women's team were playing in what used to be what is now the WSL, but then it used to be the National League. So we had Arsenal in it. We had Doncaster Bells. We had Leeds, who were up there. Chelsea weren't around much at all. They were quite a lower team. So I did that. And then I moved from coaching the women's team, stayed in the community. And then I worked for the youth academy, worked for the various different teams for about 7 years, I think it was. So, did my badges, went through, worked with some great, great young players. I think it was like, you know, you're seeing, I'd like to say I had the biggest impact on all the players that come through, but obviously I was just one of many people that were coaching the latest ones that have come through. So
are you referring to the likes of Gareth Bale, Luke Shaw, James Ward-Prowse, Callum Chambers and the Ox?
Yeah, so less so Gareth Bale. If I'd have coached him, he'd obviously been a brilliant player.
not playing golf.
But yeah, so I work with Luke Shaw, James Ward-Prowse, Callum Chambers, and to be fair, Harrison Reed was in that group as well. Matt Target, who's Aston Villa at the moment. So Oxlade-Chamberlain, he was in that, a little bit older than that group, so I didn't work with him so much. But I worked with his dad quite a bit, to be fair. So yeah, a lot of them have come through. They were a brilliant squad. And it's funny, I was talking to someone the other day. So James Ward-Prowse, dad came up to me at one point. He said, "John, did you know this team has won 47 games in a row?" And I went, "No, I didn't know that. We didn't really be recorded, but that wasn't the main thing." And he said, "It would have been 61, but you played a team where there was trialists in it. So it's your fault we lost that game."
Blaming you then. Blaming you.
Yeah, I thought that was OK. But that, to be that fair, that group was so special.
Yeah.
That I think any coach would have had similar sort of rewards as in terms of how they went through. They were hugely competitive, very intelligent and footballers. And of course, the recruitment of the club was wonderful. So you go under a couple of years and over a couple of years, all those players now are, you know, even some of that squad who are playing League One, you know, they're still great success to get so many players through.
Like you say, you know, Southampton, cracking academy, bringing loads of players through. Bit of, if they kept all those players, they'd probably be up there challenging.
They would, wouldn't they? Yeah, so true.
They would. You know, it's difficult, isn't it? You've got a, as a club, they've got to decide, you know, what's the best for them. So you might suffer on your budget line if you don't sell a few players.
You went on to Dorchester, didn't you, as an assistant manager in the conference? Yeah. So you're only there for one season, I see.
Yeah, because the manager of Dorchester went and head of youth job at Bournemouth, and he asked me to come. So yeah, that helped a little bit, but obviously I'd done a good job.
And I guess were you there during the glory years of Bournemouth? I can't work out. Was that when they got promoted to the Premier League, or was it just after?
No, I was there just beforehand. Yeah. Eddie Howe, he was at Burnley when I was there. So, yeah, so there was another manager, a couple of managers before he returned. And I'd gone about the same time he was coming in.
Quite an exciting time to be around the club, because I guess that was sort of when they were on the up.
Yeah, no, they were. They were investing a little bit more in the squad. The training ground was being developed, pitch area, you know, in all around the stadium was being developed. The structure of the academy was improving as well. And, yeah, you know, some players have still made it through. Ailey Cargill, who's not there anymore, he's gone to MK Dons. He was there. You got a couple of other players that have gone through. So, you know, there was still that recruitment of the young players that were still coming through and got into the first team.
I think the thing is, these days, academies are so important to clubs, even clubs at lower levels, you know, like ourselves. Your experience in various academies throughout the years can only bode well, really, can't it?
Well, I think academies, often their success is the recruitment and then how you deal with those young players and help support and develop them both mentally, physically, younger, but then tactically as they get a bit older. But it's that investment in time with them and give them that quality in terms of the support, but having a good recruitment. So Southampton's recruitment was very special, how they identified the players and the right players. But of course, you have to have good support staff. So the physios, the strength and conditioning analyst side of things, as well as the psychology and the coaching. So all of those married together help support those players through. Because you've always got to realise as well is not all of them are going to come through. So you've got a responsibility to football to help support them to be better, no matter what level they play at, but also support them in terms of psychologically. And sometimes you don't always get that right. It's a huge disappointment, no matter how you tell people that they're not going to make it. And I've had to sit in some of those rooms and you see not only disappointment on the young player's face, but also the parents who've invested a huge amount of time going up and down the motorways and getting them to training and games. So it's not a nice thing to do, but you've got to do it sometimes.
Part of the job,
yeah,
I guess.
it's part of the job. But yeah, that must be the hardest thing in the world. And I suppose, especially in this day and age with mentality and being spoken about a lot, I think it is something that some clubs could probably do better on it than what they're doing at the moment.
Yeah, it's that direction, isn't it? Making sure that there's people around who have that knowledge to support that. And I've had it before, you know, like the welfare person tapped me on it. John, I think we need to deal with this way and I think it'll be better. And I've gone, okay. Yeah, let's follow it that way, because I've certainly made mistakes, but had to have good people around you helps you to support you in that, because that's why you have experts to deal with different things. As a coach, you're probably not an expert in all areas, but it helps to have knowledge and it helps to seek the advice of others for certain aspects. And, you know, I mean, like I said, we don't always get it right all the time. Even with the best intentions, you mess a few things up. So, and I've done that a few times. Might be a couple of players listening to this nodding at the time zone. Yeah.
Right, John, it's been an absolute pleasure. We're just aware you've got the women's team to sort out. So,
well, I'm looking forward to that. And we've got some good people helping us. Nathan Bowen has been fantastic with his efforts and energy to do that, even delivering some lovely clean bibs to me. So I put them in the cupboard. Will they still be there at this training session?
You have to have a look.
I doubt it.
When will you know about the FAs, if you're going to go up to step five? When will you know?
I don't know. I suppose...
Because I guess your preparation sort of depends on that, really, doesn't it?
Well, the preparation will be the same, because I'd like to recruit the same players. Mm-hmm. It may be that going up might help us to keep some of the current squad who still want to invest, still want to play. So they might think, we deserve to go up and I want to play at that high level. So that will help keep the players we've currently got, but it may help to recruit some others. But I'll be looking to have as best squad as I possibly can, so it won't be too dissimilar in terms of people we're trying to invest some energy into, because of the fact that, you know, you still want to be successful. And I think the leagues are going to keep getting better or more challenging because of the more excitement around women's football now.
John Donoghue, thank you very much for joining us on the Rebel Yell podcast. And we look forward to meeting you in person very soon.
This is the Rebel Yell podcast.
Three very interesting interviews there. It's great to hear from John, the new women's manager, and always good to hear from Nathan and Barry. Quite exciting times for the club, getting up to that national self standard and plans for the future, possibly to National League football.
Yeah, and also, you know, John's what he's got plans, you know, to try and get Worthing Women climbing the leagues. Hopefully we'll get that promotion and we'll start in a higher league next season, because it's well deserved. But obviously, you know, with his CV and background that he's got with academy and women's football, it can only bode well for the future of the women's team. So we just appeal to the fans to come out on a Sunday as well as a Saturday if you can.
Yeah, 100%. It'll be good to see a crowd down. As you said about when they had the cup game, the promotion, it was 300 odd, but the following week, there's back down to 40. So if you can get a bit of a following going, look what happens at Lewis. And I don't want to be disrespectful to Lewis, but I'm pretty sure the women have a bigger following than the men's at Lewis. Is that right?
I think they do, to be honest.
Yeah, they get more. So if we can send some of our fans to the women's games on Sunday, that'd be fantastic. But Pete, I think that comes to the end of our two specials of the Rebel Yell end of season unparty, which cleverly named. I don't know if that was clever or a bit weirdly named, but...
Well, always weirdly when you're involved. But
yeah.
No, it's been really good to do it and just talk about football and, you know, Worthing specifically. So, and hopefully we've got something to look forward to in the future. And I'm presuming we'll probably do one of these before the season starts, catch up with everybody and
yeah,
see what we
Well, we have got a season start date. What was the date again?
14th of August.
14th of August. So I'm sure we'll get some pre-season friendlies in there. The RebelYell.live service will be back with parting thanks to MK Window Cleaning, who sent sponsorship out for the Rebel Yell podcast and RebelYell.live. We'll be back next season. And as Pete says, I'm sure we'll do some sort of pre-season chat. Tune fat, maybe in a pub garden or something. Hopefully more than the pub garden then. And maybe inside. But with the snow and everything like that right now, you hope to God it won't be snowy in August or anything. It'll be global warming and all that. But anyway, I digress. Pete, it's been a pleasure.
Digressing.
Yeah. It's been enjoyable and we'll see you all next season.
Take care.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.